When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Great. So next up, we have Pete Sampson covering all things Notre Dame for The Athletic. How's it going, Pete?
Good. It's when you say all things, usually that's a bit of a stretch, but I'm actually putting together a big baseball story for the end of the week, which is kind of new territory for me.
It's a very, very timely after recording this after the big upset of Tennessee. So that's got to be fun to dive into.
Yeah, absolutely. It's they're a great story. And ultimately, it's like, what do you like about this job? Telling great stories, and it doesn't just have to be football. So it's like when a baseball story comes along or a hockey story comes along, those are fun to get into as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. So again, we appreciate you making some time to talk with us today and giving a little bit of a peek behind the curtain, kind of as your work as a Notre Dame beat writer. And before we dive in though, I'm assuming most people know, where can people find you online and on Twitter?
Online at Twitter, at Pete Sampson with the underscore afterwards. I'm at The Athletic, where I've been four seasons down, fifth one coming up. It's a great place to work, get to tell great stories, do different things. So try to differentiate the coverage there from what else is out there. And there's a lot of great stuff out there. But my perspective is, if you're going to ask somebody to pay to read your stuff, you better make it really good. So that's the bar that I'm trying to clear there. And trying and getting there some of the time, but not all of the time. But, you know, you do your best.
Yeah, I mean, it's very evident from the reader's perspective that it is something different and not just how many articles can I get out a day, which is it's got to be fun. So we'll get into that, but kind of taking a step back. And I'm always curious, especially looking at people who are getting into sports writing. You know, was there a point kind of in your life or a specific age where sports really began to take over a large portion of your brain?
Growing up, I was one of those kids, grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I knew that I was not very good at sports, but my teacher seemed to indicate that I was good at writing. So I was like, well, how can we put those two things together? And I think it was second or third grade, like last year, my mom found this book in our basement of like Sports Superstars by Pete Sampson. I think it was Peter Sampson back then. In second or third grade. And I like the how those two things fit together. I mean, it's probably like a lot of kids, you know, you turn down the volume on the TV and try to announce the games yourselves. You know, collecting baseball cards and football cards was a thing when I was a kid. I'm 44. So you can, that sort of dates me a little bit. And so I was always sort of intrigued by the media aspect of it on top of the game itself. Newspapers were kind of interesting to me, but I didn't know what I was doing when I went to college. I went to DePaul University freshman year, kind of that student activities night, you know, like walking in the newspaper. Well, I'd like to do this. Have you ever done this before? No. Do you know anything about it? No. Okay. Why don't you cover the football team? I'm like, okay, it sounds good. So that was sort of how I got into it. It was sort of by doing it and failing it and just trying and learning as you went.
That's pretty interesting. And do you have any specific, you know, authors, journalists, or mediums that you read growing up that had an impact on that?
Growing up in Michigan, you couldn't follow sports media and not know who Mitch Albom was. That was a big one for me as a kid. So that would be what I point to the most. I mean, since I've been covering Notre Dame, you know, I think I sort of gravitate towards people who are a little bit different, whether it's like Wright Thompson, you sort of see the way different people approach the job. When I started on the beat, David Haw was at the South Bend Tribune and the Chicago Tribune. I thought he did an interesting sort of unique take on things. So like, early in my career, newspapers were big. So Chicago Tribune, you'd read that, Chicago Sometimes. People probably don't know who Jay Mariotti is anymore, and that's for the best. But you know, living in Chicago for a little bit, you sort of read what these, like, I don't know, it's kind of hot take, but like you're on the back page of these newspapers. So, I mean, you know, Rick Morrissey, Rick Tellender, guys like that. If the, I don't know if anyone saw the old like Sports Reporters show on like ESPN2 at 12:30 AM on a Sunday, like those were the kind of people that I read a lot when I was, you know, in my early 20s. I was living in Chicago and just trying to figure out like, okay, what's a voice? How do you do this? How do you get people to read? So you just tried to read as much as you possibly could.
Yeah, I was also, as a, you know, I think as a second and third grader, I had the Chicago Tribune open every morning. And again, I was probably a bit of a weird kid for doing that. But I, you know, I appreciate a lot of those kind of articles, because back then it wasn't, everything wasn't immediate at your fingertips. Yeah. You had to wait until the articles came out to read them, which for me is a bit of a, not a bit of, it's definitely a dying art when it comes to so much of the news coming out so quickly. But taking a little bit of a kind of a approach into kind of your experience at DePauw. So you're kind of roughly in Notre Dame territory. Were you any bit of a Notre Dame fan, or how did that kind of, how did you land with Notre Dame?
So I definitely was not a Notre Dame fan growing up in Michigan. My mom went to Michigan State. My dad went to Michigan. I gravitated more towards my mom. So I remember, oh geez, I think my first Notre Dame memory would have been 1990 or 1991. Notre Dame played at Michigan State. They were number one, and the ball bounced off a Michigan State DB's chest and Adrian Jarrell caught it. And then Notre Dame went on to win. I think it was like the immaculate deflection is probably how Tim Priester and the late great Lou Somogyi would have put it on a cover in Blue and Gold Illustrated. So no, I didn't follow Notre Dame at all. Well, I shouldn't say at all, but like I wasn't like a Notre Dame fan in any way. And then I didn't start covering Notre Dame until right after I graduated, because my girlfriend at the time was down to two law schools. It was either Vanderbilt or Notre Dame. And she chose Notre Dame. And I worked for a newspaper outside Chicago called the Daily Herald for a year, less than a year. And I wanted to be closer to her. So I took a job at Blue and Gold Illustrated in 2001 in March. I had no idea what Blue and Gold Illustrated was. But I certainly knew a little bit about Notre Dame football, but a long way from probably what the average fan knew at the time. So that was sort of, so I started covering Notre Dame. It was to be closer to a girl I was dating, and we'll be married 20 years next month. So it worked out pretty well for hopefully both of us.
You don't have regrets wishing that you were covering Clark Lee in the SEC right now on the Vanderbilt?
Yeah. I probably would have been like advertising or something. I don't know. I don't think my sports media career would have gone very far if I tried to cover Vanderbilt.
Yeah. Fun. Just a small little aside. I was actually one of my college coaches. I played at Holy Cross in Massachusetts. One of my college coaches was Nick Lozinski, and I was catching up with him the other day, and he just had great things to say about you. And again, the one benefit of going to Vanderbilt is you would have been able to, you know, way down the line, reconnect with Nick Lozinski.
Absolutely. I mean, he's one of the greats, just a great, great guy. So it's going to be fun to watch sort of where his career goes at Vanderbilt and working with Clark Lee again.
Yeah. I've told him to make sure that he's as visible on the Vanderbilt sidelines as he was on the Notre Dame sidelines, because I felt that every time I flipped on a game, it was just him, and I'd just point and be like, oh, there's Nick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So I'm curious more. I don't think I've ever actually heard or understood the founding of Irish Illustrated. I'd love to kind of hear what went into that and obviously how it evolved over time.
So when I started at Blue and Gold Illustrated in 2001, I don't think the publication was yet affiliated with Rivals. Like, you know, every publication is affiliated with a recruiting network now, and that wasn't the case back then. Like, the internet was sort of just starting in this sphere.
Yeah.
So they linked up, and then the guy who owned Blue and Gold Illustrated, I believe in sort of late 2004, early 2005, was like, I want to be independent. I'm sort of severing the relationship with Rivals.com. And at that point, Rivals.com came to me and I was like, hey, we really like what you do. Could you just do Notre Dame stuff for us? Like, all the subscriptions are sort of in-house with Rivals, so they would sort of be your bank book of business. Mm-hmm. And just go with that. And I was like, oh man, that's okay. I've been doing this for 4 years, but, you know, having a little autonomy sounds great. So I just sort of went for it at that point. And that I was actually living in Chicago at the time. And that was like, all right, we got to move back to South Bend because you got to be there every day. I couldn't just come in time to time. I needed to be here all the time. So, you know, even though when my wife graduated from Notre Dame lost in 2003, we're like, we're out of here, never to return. So we moved back in 2005, and that's sort of how Irish Illustrated got started. It was like Blue and Gold Illustrated and Rivals split. Rivals hired me to start Irish Illustrated. And then, you know, we sort of got the band back together a little bit with Tim Priester and Jack Freeman, who's kind of our webmaster video guy. You know, then how do we build out recruiting? But we're affiliated with Rivals, so that helped. So that was sort of how Irish Illustrated got going. It was like somebody else made a business decision, and then Rivals reached out to me and was like, hey, how about you just sort of pick up this ball that got left on the ground here and run with it?
That's super interesting. And I've talked to a couple of people already who are former, you know, college athletes, but I guess you have gone through the recruiting process as a recruit then, both for Irish Illustrated and then, you know, when you were going over to The Athletic. So when you're moving over to The Athletic, was there a, you know, a recruiting wine and dine aspect to that?
Not a lot. I think by the time The Athletic reached out to me, it was still kind of unstable, might be too dramatic, but it hadn't like established itself yet. But I knew that covering Notre Dame, if I was going to do this like for the next 15, 20 years, I couldn't live and die with every recruiting decision from a professional point of view, in terms of like being on top of all of that all the time. Or when the third team middle linebacker leaves, have that like be leave my kids to go write something on that. Like it just felt kind of unsustainable for like the parenting part of my life.
Yeah.
And so when The Athletic reached out, that was appealing to it. And then just the people there who many of them I had covered Notre Dame with over the years, whether Chicago Tribune or Sun Times or ESPN. So many of them seemed to end up at The Athletic and spoke very, very highly of it. And The Athletic, I think my skepticism about like, all right, is this going to work or not? And the people I talked to, they were like, Pete, okay, you cover Notre Dame. You've covered Notre Dame for 15 years. So people know who you are. It's Notre Dame. They like to read and they have a small amount of disposable income usually to pay to read. If it doesn't work for Notre Dame, it's not going to work for anybody. So we think you should do it. And I was like, okay, great. And it's, they were right. And yeah, I loved working there because it just, you get to do different, interesting stuff. That's sort of like a little bit kind of cuts against the grain from what typical media is.
No, and I was reading a quote of yours when you kind of went over to The Athletic, and kind of the quote that really stood out to me was, you're giving the subscribers a reason to read instead of just a reason to click. And I think I've seen this, you know, firsthand with, you know, the quality of your articles as well as the frequency, but, you know, I'm curious, as you've alluded to, but, you know, how drastically or in what way has this really changed kind of both your process and your day to day?
It took a while to be able to let stuff go, like the day-to-day beat stuff. I mean, that was sort of where how I like carved out my career for the first 15 years, like be on top of every single thing all the time. So to not do that was tricky. And then also it's like, all right, so what are these stories that are so different? Because if they're so like, if they were so great, wouldn't everybody else already be writing them? So I had to convince myself that no, actually there's a lot of good stuff out there, and I had some good ideas. And then, you know, this is more just like good graces of the people that I've worked with for Notre Dame, like in the football offices. They seem to really like The Athletic. Maybe it's because one of their founders went to Notre Dame, but I've been able to get, I think, yes, or yeah, let's work with you on that much more now than I was at Irish Illustrated. Like I'm the same reporter, but I think they sort of see the stories that I'm telling is different. And that sort of helped me have some doors open that maybe in the past I would have to argue to be open or they wouldn't be open at all.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you're telling me that your wife and kids wouldn't want you to go back to the day and day grind of the beat?
No. I think that even this amount of grind sometimes for my kids is a little bit like, once October is like getting to the back half of the season, they're like, all right, we're about ready for the football season to be done. I'm like, eh, we're only about halfway there.
Yeah. And then the obviously the off seasons are quite different than, you know, probably off seasons were, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's the pace. I think sometime in the last two or three years, I feel like college football turned into the NBA, where it's just, it's a year round sport, or the NFL, it's a year round sport. And that I think we all got adjusted to it because we had to, but it's definitely a change from where things were.
Yeah. And so, you know, South Bend is obviously, you know, quite the Notre Dame town, to say the least. And, you know, you're in, I guess in my words here, but, you know, I think some others might agree, a sort of a small celebrity. Do you ever get people who, you know, come up to you around South Bend and either introduce themselves or, you know, maybe more aggressively ask you for any insider scoops?
Yes, that does happen. When it happens with my kids, they're 12 and 9. They think it's absolutely hilarious because they do think that I'm famous, and I'm just like, I'm not. I just cover the football team. But I mean, I took them out for lunch at Chipotle a couple years ago, and Crazy Train came on over the loudspeaker, and someone turned around from across the restaurant and said, "Hey, Pete, it's Third Down." And my kids were like, "What is that about?" And I was like, "I'm not even going to try to explain this to you, because I couldn't capture the essence of why Crazy Train and Third Down is so funny to anyone who's been in Notre Dame Stadium for the last 6 years." But some that does happen sometimes. I think it's hilarious. And then whatever the weirdest thing to me is, like, when people do that, they never introduce themselves. Like, they just come up and start talking. And I was like, what was your name again? Like, that, I don't know what the sort of glitch in the system is there, but that if you're listening to this and you do see me and you want to come over, awesome. But please introduce yourself so I can remember who you are.
That's so interesting you say that, because I was talking with Tyler James from Rivals, and I asked him that same question, and he had a similar response where he's like, people come up to me and he's like, "I appreciate it." And they say, "Hey, great. I love your stuff." And then he's like, it's almost like once they get whatever they wanted to say out, then they're just gone. And he's like, "You know, I'm okay to have a conversation with you." Yeah. And I would happily do that. Not like all the time and know the time or place, but at least introduce yourself. So that is really weird.
It is just a strange, like, glitch in the system. I can't explain it, but it does happen from time to time. It definitely happens on like road games a lot. My mm-hmm. kids are never with me on road games, but like, if you go out to a bar on a Friday night before a game, like, that's happening for sure. Like, you just assume that it will. And that's great. Like, I love meeting people, because it just sort of gives you a different perspective on, you know, I'm not writing for myself. And I mean, in some ways I are, because it's like, you know, sort of the creative process I enjoy, but, you know, I want to know what the fans and the readers are interested in reading about. And like, that's kind of it's a very anecdotal way to pick up on what those themes are, but it helps me too to sort of hear what other people are thinking about.
No, I think that's really poignant. And, you know, if I see you in person in South Bend, I will come up and shake your hand and just start talking right away.
Please do. Yes.
But kind of taking a step back, you know, if you could cover any other college football team outside of Notre Dame, who would that be?
I haven't really thought about that. I mean, I think covering an SEC team would be fun for about a season, as long as I got to go back to Notre Dame at the very end of it. You know, talking to my colleagues at The Athletic who covered Georgia or Alabama or even LSU, it's
no Lane Train. Just,
yeah, no, I haven't talked to any. I think Lane Train actually would be a riot to cover, because you could go down and hang out with Maurice Crum and Charlie Weiss Jr. at the same time. So, Ole Miss would be fun, but it would be interesting to sort of see how, like, the perceptions of the fan base were different at, like, an Alabama or an LSU or a Georgia, where I think Notre Dame, there's some leeway about, like, letting growth happen or enjoying the ride a little bit, whereas down there it's just very results-driven. And it's kind of it's how I imagine Notre Dame fans probably were, like, in the Holtz era, where – you know, nothing was enough. And if you won by 20, why didn't you win by 35? Like, I think that's, like, I wouldn't want to exist in that media world, but I think it would be interesting to sort of just drop in and sort of try to understand a little bit about what it's about.
Yeah. One of my goals in life is to go to a game at each major SEC stadium. And I'm so far, I'm 0 for all of them right now, but, you know, as I'm having a kid here in the next couple months, my first child, I'm sure I'm gonna have plenty more time to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's I remember even writing a lot about Jerry Tillery and him mentioning once or twice, like, you have to go to a game at Tiger Stadium in Death Valley. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know how that's ever going to happen, but like, it sounds like a good idea. I'd like to see it.
Cool. So obviously NIL has become quite the story. We're not going to dig too much into the semantics of it, but I'm curious if, you know, 18-year-old at that point, probably Peter Sampson is a 5-star QB recruit. You know, what NIL deal are you signing?
I don't know. They change like every week. So back then I probably would have been like free merch at Abercrombie and Fitch or something. I don't know. It's like, I can't think of anything all
were
that
you,
creative.
Were you one of the Abercrombie and Fitch models standing shirtless?
No. There was just one of those at Woodland Mall in Grand Rapids that I went to. I don't think I would have the kids today, you know, with their G-Wagon and Aston Martins, like I don't think I would have thought that big, to be honest, about where I could take my NIL value and monetize it in short order.
Well, that's, I think it's still interesting. And I'm really curious to see the next couple years of, you know, how things shake out. Just a kind of one small question and then one kind of larger thought question to end here, because I know we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left. But does Matt Fortuna ever get jealous that you're hanging out with your ex-girlfriends?
He must. I mean, I know he has a very special relationship with PJ Fleck. So I think that he's able to at least have that relationship where I don't have any, I don't have any contact with PJ. The fact that I get to go hang out with Clark Lee, I think is, you know, it's hard for him to stomach that sometimes.
That's great. And then just kind of the last little question here, but before we wrap things up, but you know, if you could have any unfiltered discussion with any player, coach, or topic completely off the record surrounding Notre Dame football, what would that be?
If you could give Brian Kelly kind of like a truth serum and we could just go out and, I mean, hey, I'll play 18 holes with you, no problem. That would be fascinating to me to sort of hear him without like the political spin, without sort of this, any defense mechanisms in play about what he thinks Notre Dame can and can't be. The reasons that he left, but like have him present them, not what Matt Fortuna and I have sort of reported out as like per sources. That would be, I think, the interview that I'd like to do the most, to sort of put a bow on, like, all right, how did you see this? What really happened? When did you know you had to do something else or wanted to do something else? Or was it just like 10 years, $95 million is a lot of money? And like, go for it, man. Like I totally understand that. So I think he's such a difficult character to nail down, because you know you're getting a lot of spin all the time there. So if you could sort of get him outside of that and just sort of relax and kick back and have a few beers, which, I mean, when you talk to people who know him, who have sort of been with him in those moments, like, you get an unvarnished regular, more of a regular guy than I think Notre Dame fans would think it would be even be possible. So that would probably be the one interview that I would love to do down the road. I realize it will never, ever occur, but that's something I'll probably think about for a long time. Yeah, or anything with Bob Diaco would be fine
too. Yeah, what I'm really curious about is, you know, what Notre Dame fans' perspective will be about Brian Kelly. I know now it's obviously still pretty hot, but, you know, how that might change over the next 5 or 10 years as we're looking upon over a decade of, you know, pretty solid to great success, where obviously now things are still a little fresh.
Yeah, this is kind of one of those, this is a fan perception question that I'm fascinated by, is what happens if Brian Kelly wins a national championship at LSU in the next 3 years? Because if you're Notre Dame at that point, don't you have to sort of take a step back and be like, all right, we actually did have a national championship winning coach who decided it was easier to win somewhere else. And he was right. Flip side, what if Marcus Freeman wins? I've had some fans say, like, if Marcus Freeman wins it all here, that would soften their stance on Brian Kelly and almost like show more gratitude to him for getting the Notre Dame job to a point where Marcus Freeman could then take it and run with it. Whereas I think, you know, if there was a Marcus Freeman in 2010, I don't think that hire would have worked out at all. Because that's not what Notre Dame needed. Brian Kelly, I think, was able to get this program to a point where it needed something else. But what it needed was a guy like Marcus Freeman. And that I think is pretty exciting. So it's just the perception of Brian Kelly. And then just, you know, if the both teams are just good 10 years from now, are there any reunion scenarios where Brian Kelly comes back to Notre Dame? I think you would have said hell no at Cincinnati, but 10 years later, sure enough, he was back at Cincinnati for a reunion. So how much time is required for, and how much water needs to go under the bridge before that's sort of like Notre Dame can get its arms around Brian Kelly and vice versa? That is kind of an interesting dynamic too.
Yeah. And that's just something that, again, we won't know with time. And it'll be really interesting, as you know, both a fan and, you know, a journalist and people who cover Notre Dame, will be really just interesting to see how that develops over the next, you know, 1 year, 5 years, and 10 years. I know it's going to be drastically different at each point along the way, but anyway, I know you've got to jump off here, but, anything else you want to leave people with before you sign off?
I'm not saying this because you're a fan and I'm talking to fans here, but I really appreciate, like getting to know Notre Dame fans in general over the last 22 years. I mean, it's half of my life literally at this point that I've covered Notre Dame football, and I've met some incredible people along the way, that I don't think I would have ever met if I hadn't been covering Notre Dame. So I have a lot of gratitude that I somehow ended up in a position that I got to cover Notre Dame. Like, I get to cover Notre Dame. I don't have to cover Notre Dame. I get to do it. And hopefully some of that gratitude comes through sometimes, but not all the time, especially after a night game on the road. But it's a great gig. I love doing it. And even though I'm not a fan, I definitely pick up on the excitement around Marcus Freeman, because as a reporter and getting to know him a little bit, I share some of the enthusiasm for like where this all can go. And again, it's like, I get to cover that. And I'm really grateful that I get to do that. So if I see you or anybody out on the road, please come up, introduce yourself, say your name. We'll have a beer together. Cause it's a great gig. I'm really fortunate to do it.
Awesome. And I think I speak for probably a lot of the fans too. We appreciate the work that you all do, and the, you know, the time and effort and energy that goes into it, because, you know, we can't consume enough of it. And, you know, you bring a pretty unique, not a pretty unique, but very unique point of view on a lot of it. So, you know, thank you as well.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Pete.